Time to check in with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for our first Tacky Talk of March 2024. Tacky.
Yeah, happy March, everyone. Good to see you, Joe. And today's the 7th of March, and it's a dreary day outside.
Yeah, typical spring in New England, right? Rain, drizzle, mist, maybe some snow. Sure, why not?
Yeah. I mean, those of you guys wonder how come I'm saying the date and the weather, because that means you know this is real time, and I am around here in Massachusetts and not some other place, which maybe we'll do this again. I mean, obviously, I enjoyed being in Texas for a mobile call on the conference. I'm sure there's another opportunity at some point for a conference and we'll do another mobile call. But, you know, I do like to let people know that if you're seeing the same weather at the same time that we're talking about, you know where I am.
Not only in Massachusetts, but at the State House today.
Yeah, we've done this a few times. I actually have a full slate of meetings at the State House, a majority of in-person meetings. I like my in-person meetings. And a few virtual ones sprinkled in the middle. So it's a full day here. As I say constantly at the end of every podcast, we are open for business. We are staffed. Front desks sometimes get overwhelmed with the phones, which means you get the automated system if they're overwhelmed at the front desk. And the State House tours are available. People want to come visit and do the tour. And, you know, if you want to find out if I'm around and we can, you know, do some pictures or whatever at the House chamber, you're happy to do that when there's not a formal session. Obviously, a formal session, we can't just go up the rostrum and take pictures. But, you know, when we're out of session, we can do things like that for folks. And it's March, which means about 2 months from now, fifth graders and other students will be coming through the building in mass. Actually, the school's great because they don't need us to set up. They've been doing it so long. They know how to do it through the tourism desk. So, yeah, I mean, as you can tell, I have my bookshelf behind me. I've seen other times I've been in the office, the bookshelf had things move around on it or nothing on it as things in my office moved around. And I actually have pictures up finally after a new painting. It only took essentially 6 months to get my pictures up. I'm not allowed to put holes in the wall. So I have to wait for State House maintenance to put the holes in for me. So I had my pictures all over the place. So, but yeah, we'll rotate the pictures around as time goes along just to shake things up. But no, yeah, babbling along about my office space. You know, I don't know if I should turn the camera around and do a 360. Actually, to do the State House tour, put you on Wi-Fi, lose you every so often, just kind of bounce you around the building, hang you around my neck, and just walk forward.
Maybe another time. So here we are 2 days after the Super Tuesday presidential primary, and pretty much as you predicted, no real surprises.
No real surprises. You know, Vermont, bit of a surprise of Nikki Haley kind of like squeaking out a win there. But obviously not enough. As I said, very early on, she needed to slam down New Hampshire hard on a win and didn't happen. She got blasted out of her home state of South Carolina. You know, they made a little hay in the news about the president losing America Samoa. It's America Samoa. I mean, I get the media is looking for like a surprise, but it's America Samoa, folks. I mean, you ever try to campaign in America Samoa? It's a long way from home.
And it's in a different time zone, in a different hemisphere.
Exactly. So it's not surprising that it's difficult to get votes there. And believe it or not, it's very hard to get delegates to come out of America Samoa. It's extremely expensive for people in these territories, Republican and Democratic Party members, to fly from their island all the way to, I believe, Chicago is the Democratic Party this year in August. Yeah, but you got to fly from Samoa to Chicago. It's a great expense. And America Samoa is not a wealthy area. So, I mean, I've watched some articles, watched some news and read some articles about some of these territories, distant territories, which Democrat and Republican parties have caucuses. Again, these are territories that don't vote in electoral elections. Because they're not part of electoral college, they're not a state, so they can't participate in U.S. presidency. However, they do participate in Democrat, Republican, perhaps other political parties' primaries and caucuses. I think sometimes people listening forget that you know, just because you're not able to vote in a final election, it doesn't prohibit the parties themselves to create territory, allow territories, U.S. territories, to participate in their election for a primary candidate. I think sometimes we forget about that. America Samoa was brought to the forefront of national media as the upset, quote unquote, win for, I believe it was Phillips. But I mean, you know, it's a long way from home. I mean, getting from Hawaii, Chicago, stuff, America, Samoa. I mean, that's a haul. So, because I think I actually have problems actually getting people to volunteer to come to the continent, so to speak, to go to the convention. I mean, it's almost like you're dragging people out.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't want to leave paradise to go to Chicago either.
It can cost them up to like $30,000.
Wow. Okay. Well, there's prohibitive right there for sure. Probably a
Yeah.
big military presence too, I would think, right?
It is. I mean, a lot of these territories have some level of military presence because that's one of the reasons why we have territories. Not the sole reason, but one of the reasons. But I mean, U.S. Virgin Islands, I think people would be hard pressed to want to come to Chicago in the summer. I mean, people want to see other places. I'm not saying you don't want to visit Chicago
Right.
because people want to get out of their island paradise sometimes. I mean, that's like my friends Hawaii. I mean, the Hawaiian legislative delegation itches to get to the continent because as much as paradise is fun, having an educational conference somewhere on the continent, for them is like, fun to get out of paradise for a week or two.
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, if you're, exposed to it every single day, it's not special, like it would be to you or me who get out of a New England winter and go to Hawaii.
Well, you hear the word New England welter. I mean,
Yeah.
New England winter, anybody else, anywhere else, at a
Yeah.
certain, and we were discussing this earlier. I mean, we're both hitting a certain age. We're like,
Yeah, shoveling really has lost its appeal for sure.
it has. So, I mean, it's only like, what I used to poo-poo in my 20s. Oh, yeah. I mean, why would I go to, a warm climate with nothing changing for like, several weeks? Even I'm aging into the stage, I'm like, huh. That's not
Yeah.
a bad idea after the fact.
Exactly, yeah.
No
Now for
surprise.
the primary, were there any changes at the state level? I know that last time we had talked about some of your colleagues retiring, so opening up some seats.
Yeah, this week, Jay Barros has announced retirement. Republicans, been here quite a few years, announced his retirement as well this week. So, again, congratulations to Jay. I mean, great colleague to work with on the other side of the aisle. Good guy to spend time with, and I think this will continue on. There may be a couple more surprises coming down. I do believe that if there's county seats that open up, it'll cause both senators and reps to take a look at those county seats that open up. It's not unusual for a rep or a senator to run for like register of deeds, run for clerk of courts, run for district attorney, and so forth.
Yeah, Governor Stencil, I think things like that. Yep.
Erin Murphy's running for, I believe, Suffolk. Clerk of courts, I think, or something like that. Counselor in Boston. I gotta read the. Someone sent me a tweet about it. I just haven't looked at the at recent. But Erin Murphy's is going to attempt to leave the Boston City Council, run for a county seat. So, it's kind of waiting to see, what else opens up around the state and whether or not other electeds, see it as an opportunity to go on to a different stage in their life.
Right. Yep. I guess the major action at the State House this week was the House passage of the supplemental budget.
Yeah, we passed $245 million supplemental budget yesterday, which also included provisions to limit the amount of time that folks can stay in emergency shelters, addresses workforce development funding, because part of it actually includes workforce development funding, about $20 million for that purpose. And of course, we're looking for greater accountability again for the administration, like we did back in November. Putting more provisions about, hey, we want to know what you're doing. This funding actually comes from leftover escrowed ARPA money. So thus far on spending on these emergency shelter situation has not been taxpayer funded in the sense of state taxpayer funded. It is remaining ARPA money. The ARPA money has to be spent by 2025. Governor Baker, I'm going to continue to complain about this, escrowed a lot of this money that none of us could find until Governor Healey came in. So love it when governors leave and actually start disclosing stuff that we didn't know about because new governor found it. So all you Charlie Baker fans were like, oh, he's a great governor. Yeah, he hid $2 billion from us, letting you all know. So Governor Healey was able to locate that money, and now we're in the time frame to get some of it spent. But that's kind of how it works. So that's where we are. So no state taxpayer money. It's remaining ARPA money. Ways and Means has already told us that it may be $1 billion next year. We don't put guardrails regarding limit people time in the facilities. It's just not going to maintain capacity. And also remind folks they're not there indefinitely. Some folks able to get out sooner than others for different reasons. And I'm not going to lie, the housing shortage continues to be a major problem here. Takes a long time to build new housing units, and creating affordable housing is hard to incentivize developers to do that. And the last time we had near $1 billion shelter crisis was at the end of the fiscal crisis in 08, but that took like 5 years to build into like a big dollar amount. And solution was to redirect money to rehabbing public housing units, as well as using Section 8 and MSRVP, which is the state Section 8, but that's only available to permanent residents and U.S. citizens. It's not available to immigrants that are not permanent residents and U.S. citizens. So this is actually part of the challenge right now, is the fact that what we normally can do for relief and emergency shelter is not available to the new migrants coming in.
Yeah, I guess a key part of this too is, well, two things: the $2,500 tax credit per trainee for companies that will provide workforce training to the migrants, and also seeking kind of expedited work authorizations from the feds to get these folks employed quicker.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cooperative effort between the feds and us to get them per work permits. Obviously, we're not the Social Security Administration. You have to have a Social Security number. Well, you don't have to, but you're supposed to have a Social Security number to get a job. I mean, otherwise it's illegal because you're getting, under the table money, which we do not encourage that at all. And the administration has two attorneys. I talked about this last week. It has two attorneys who've been hired as outside counsel to process. We are like to actually get more outside counsel. To process these things as quick as possible. We can only move as fast as the paperwork goes to the feds, and then try to encourage more hiring of these new folks. The unemployment rate, I still believe, is under 4% in Massachusetts, and that means we have a labor shortage. And the more rapidly we can encourage employers to take people who are work paper ready, also puts people in a better footing to hopefully start building lines of credit and. To actually be able to hopefully find ways for them to find housing, even in the midst of a housing shortage.
Yeah. So with the ARPA funding, Tacky, so $245 million from that fund, how much is left in that fund, do you know?
I think it's less than 700. I think it's under 700 at this point. I
Okay.
think because this bone of contention again with the Baker administration last cycle is actually, where all this money was. So this is kind of where we are. I think there might be some other trust fund monies being moved around. We have a lot of trust funds in the state that isn't actually, oddly enough, it's not taxpayer money either. Settlements and other forms of unexpected incomes, so to speak. But next cycle out, I mean, next fiscal year, we're definitely going to have to figure out put this as the main part of the budget, because I think the original budget only had about $200 million of state taxpayer money that was anticipated for the what we're projecting would be the housing crisis. This situation's like unexpected. I was talking to a friend earlier today how we've now faced essentially 4 years of unexpected.
Oh, well, yeah, starting with what the Snowmageddon of 2015, really, right?
Some again 15, then we had the 17 crazy nor'easters, then we had 2020 COVID, then we had 2020 post-COVID-ish, whatever that was. And then, obviously we've had like 4 years now of racial unrest in this country, followed by a roller coaster economy that no one knows what's really going on. And over 1 million people died of COVID, and that's one-third of that plus was most likely working age folks. And then you have a lot of retirements going on at the same time. And then you have geopolitical problems, which the state doesn't have any say in the matter, but we feel the impacts.
Yeah, and let's not forget the looming MBTA issues as well.
You may have noticed that the MBTA red line has moved a little bit quicker as the track replacements going forward. We got noticed that the MBTA is doing public hearings now in terms of their next transportation improvement plan. They do this every single year around this time of year to get public input. I'm not saying a miracle is going to happen and everything's fixed, but progress is made, and I do understand it's slow and painful for riders to tolerate. We just don't want another derailment.
Right. It has to be safe for, it's slow is one thing, being unsafe is another.
That's correct. And Philip Ng, the general manager, he is an engineer, and he has been made no bones about past mismanagement of the T's capital budget and poor planning and everything else that I think a lot of us suspected. But he basically just brought it to daylight and said, I got to fix these things because I found it they're wrong. So again, it's an engineering approach on how he's looking at the T. I think it's very beneficial, but I'm not envious. He's got a huge task and it's going to continue. He's doing quarterly, give or take a month, meetings with legislators in bulk. And the MBTA staff has been pretty responsive on, issues and concerns. And of course, if you haven't signed up, MBTA does a weekly newsletter updating about capital improvement that's going on. It's not a bad thing to have. So they're trying. I'm not going to fault them for that. But I think everyone listening here cares more about the results than the trying.
People want instant gratification these days more than ever. That's so true. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't blame you. I mean, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, residents and riders, taxpayers should see the results and they want to see them. So I agree with that. But it's a time-consuming thing and I'm not making excuses. This is just the reality.
Back to the supplemental budget. Can we talk a little bit more about some of the other items in here, extending some of the pandemic era reforms.
Sure.
Alcohol to go.
Yeah, as some of you may have partake, restaurants are now allowed to do alcohol to go, serving limitations of sizes and certain containers that has to be demonstrated it was sealed upon the exit so it can prove it's been tampered with once you leave the restaurant, as well as basically what I call no rules outdoor dining, meaning that the building and safety codes don't matter. So some communities still practice this. The most newsworthy ones, the ones in the North End restaurants. You guys have seen that plenty of times through changing the combat between Mayor Wu and the restaurants there regarding that. If you've been to North End, you understand why the residents are upset. If you ever visited there, and you know the problem. So, I mean, it's a
You
resident.
can't budge in some of those little streets, yeah.
Yeah, and it's the issue between the city of Boston, the restaurants, and the residents, and the challenges there. But I mean, even in Quincy, I mean, people have outdoor dining existence using it. I don't see a whole lot of new outdoor dining. But of course, things like fairs and other events, I mean, those are one day permits or limited day permits that the city can grant, provided the health department signs off on it.
Right.
So, I mean, we'll see how it plays out. So, the proposal from the House is to kind of make it permanent and see how it goes. The other ones are actually pretty helpful. It's like reverse mortgage remote for another year. Under state law, you can only consult about a reverse mortgage in person. Pandemic, we allow that up, and it seems to be much more effective, particularly older folks, on trying to get from place to place on this type of consultation. There's some stuff on open meeting laws regarding public meetings. You can still do those remotely. Those are pretty popular. I think it's very effective, increases some participation on at least people at least cable, know how to watch it live. Nothing against QATV, but you maybe want to make a you can't make a commentary through QATV watching a hearing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yep.
So, we do some of that stuff. The Senate, just to let you know, Senate hasn't agreed to anything. So
Right.
I don't know what the
Right.
Senate's going to do on any of these matters. So stay tuned, folks, on what's going to happen. The pandemic era stuff actually sunsets on March 31st.
Oh, okay. So it's coming up. So, the fact that nursing students are able to practice before they graduate, I think was very helpful during the pandemic. Looks like that might continue.
Well, there's a as we kind of alluded earlier, I mean, there's a labor shortage, but healthcare continues to be one of those real struggling areas. Put aside the challenges of pay, it's a lot of hours. You can make more money doing something else. And in the healthcare field, there's a lot of private non-hospital companies that can give you 9 to 5-ish closer hours, steady paycheck versus being in a rotational situation in a hospital. And I mean, it's a reflection that we do have a lot of people in nursing school, but we need help today.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So if folks are considering a field, healthcare might be something to look at for sure.
Yeah, it's all sectors of healthcare. It's not necessarily just in the medical component. I mean, And that includes administration. They're having problems, hiring janitorial staff, the lower end of the income scale, so to speak. And even just general volunteers to help out on day-to-day kind of like meeting people, watch folks, have someone have a conversation with its patient, things like that. So yeah, I mean, it's again part of the labor market challenges, and healthcare is one of the places that is struggling to hire right now. Again, it's also very competitive. Wages are very competitive still, particularly in very specific fields where there's shortages. And honestly, I mean, there's only so much money that hospitals can pay because they're also not-for-profit entities and they're tied to insurance billing. So, healthcare centers have this like really kind of strange budget where, the prices can jack up, but insurance may not cover it, and it becomes a problem for patients. But they also limit how much they can actually make you co-pay because it's tied to an insurance company. And it's a whole bureaucratic, multi-industry crossover complexity. So, and like I said, also not for profit. It's not like you can find a venture capitalist to put money into the business to backlog any financial losses.
Well, that's what happened with Stewart, right?
Yeah, Stewart is exactly it. I mean, the capital investment groups have decided that it's no longer sufficiently profitable, or they're not able to get their steady stream of income from a business, and they're essentially downsizing immensely. Again, we're kind of unusual in the Northeast, and a lot of Northeast actually has not-for-profit hospitals. Let's go to the center part of the country. For-profit hospitals is the norm.
So it's a little bubble we're in up here for many things, but for healthcare especially.
Yeah, I remind folks, the world we live in here doesn't necessarily reflect the whole world we live in the United States. Some, and not even sometimes, in Massachusetts, people that live in Greater Boston has a different lifestyle from Central Mass, the South Coast, the Berkshires. I mean, it's different everywhere. It's just because you have a certain things that you enjoy or dislike, as the case may be, where you live here. It doesn't mean, 100 miles going westbound is the same thing.
So that's the supplemental budget, but what's the progress on the actual state budget for the next fiscal year? Anything happening in there?
Well, budget meetings have begun with House Ways and Means. I have my scheduled meeting this month, as well as the House Asian Caucus is trying to get their priority list together for their for that as well. There's an ongoing conversation in the caucus trying to set our priorities. So, again, herding cats, people, herding cats, and somehow I'm responsible for herding these cats at the moment. And it's given the budget challenges next year, unexpected costs, and even though we have a very strong rainy day fund. I need to kind of be realistic about my ass and, get a sense from, the shared ways and means, what is realistic. It's always tough in election cycle because no one wants to get hurt. This was a tough tour yesterday for many people because we do recognize putting time limits on, how long you can stay in emergency shelter, going with the governor's cap. There are going to be families going to be left out of the conversation. In general. And, honestly, I'm going to repeat this again and again. How often does anyone listening to this, listen to us, see children and pregnant women living on the street? Not saying it doesn't happen, it does happen, but I'd be hard pressed to remember the last time I've seen that happen. And of course, I work at Beacon Hill in the Boston Commons right in front of us. Trust me, I do see a lot of homeless folks. And I don't see pregnant women and children. So yesterday was a very hard vote because we are aware of the consequences of this that may appear after the 9 month or 9 month allowance to stay in there. I mean, we do have some provisions to allow you to stay longer if you're in progress of getting work, and it means you're in the progress of getting work, literally sounds like. And certain persons, certain types of developmental disabilities or other types of physical disabilities, we make some exemptions for it, but picture you sitting in a room voting, and you had a budget crisis, is unsustainable economically, and then you got to make this hard decision there about whether or not you're going to accept the fact in 9 months you may see a child on the street. May, I'm going to say, well, may. So this is the same thing going to seeing ways and means in a budget crisis, in terms of this unexpected cost. What is realistic for a lot of very important programs the state provides, as well as my personal, pet project, so to speak, or pork or special interest or whatever you want to call it, that I've been very fortunate to provide some funding for, along with Bruce Ayers and John Keenan and Speaker Mariano. I mean, all of us collectively work together on these local these local assistance for the city, whether it be not-for-profit or directly to the city, how much realistically speaking is their trim back? And even if you get the money, as you all seen, there's the governor's 9C cuts. So, there might be a revision of revenue numbers come end of April. But if we're not making benchmark because it's about making whether or not we make the estimate, our prediction of what the income would be. There's an expectation perhaps the 9C cuts in the fall. So let's say I'm tempering people's expectations.
Yeah, no, I understand. Especially with, the economy so wacky, just the projections, you don't know how accurate they really are.
Yeah, I've been around a while. I mean, I came into the State House as an intern and staffer at the end of the saving and loan bubble and the long impact it had right into the mid-90s. And then I was around for the dot-com bust, which was a 10% revenue shortfall by October. We missed estimates by 10%. And that was like a horror show of like 3 years. And then by the time he caught a breath after the dot-com bubble bursting, and you had the financial housing crisis bubble crack, within 6 years of that one. So by the time you could catch a breath, another huge economic recession hit, and that lingered right up to about 2015-ish. And then, we had fairly prosperous time period right up to COVID. And then, and then we had this weird economy for 3 years. Thought we could get our feet under ourselves again with, with the more predictability of where the economy is going. And of course, no, predictability is hard. And then we have this unexpected cost associated with this latest issue and the migrant issue. So, yeah, it's been, I've been around for essentially one, two, three. This will be my fourth weird economic crisis, but not my fourth recession.
Right. Yeah. The rainy day fund, last I looked, it was like a little over $8 billion. Does that sound right?
Yeah, about $82 billion. We talked about this last week, regarding we passed a bill last week to allow the interest to be used for paying down debt, state debt, also to be used to leverage money against the federal government. It has an expiration date of allowance at the end of 2026. So it's not for, actually, it's the beginning of 2020, it's the beginning of 2026. So it's not in forever, but it's a pilot program to see if it makes sense and doesn't have a negative effect on our credit rating. There's guardrails in there about how much to spend, where to spend it, and accountability of how to use that interest from the rainy day fund. Principal is not touched. We do not touch any principal. And the guardrails actually will prevent, taking interest out if there is an economic crisis, which may be sooner than later, depending how things look. So it is funded by capital gains money. Capital gains money is not part of the main budget. It is only going to rainy day fund. And those of you that know about real estate, I've seen more for sale signs up, but they're not moving very fast.
Right.
Even in Wallace, where I live near school, those homes are getting picked up very, very quickly. They're taking a little longer, I've noticed, as I seem to sign up a little longer. And of course, part of capital gains is the stock market, and it's been a topsy-turvy stock market through parts of 2023, but definitely, I don't know what's going on in 2024. So you guys also know I watch the consumer data, nature of my chairmanship. And I do pay attention to some of these macroeconomic issues that just trickle back to us, like the interest rates. Chairman Powell, Federal Reserve Chairman Powell, he was right now before, I believe today's the Senate, on his is it biannual? I think it's biannual update.
That's right. Yep. And right now, the signals are that things are okay, so no need to cut interest rates. So we'll see what that causes.
Yeah, the Federal Reserve has an interesting quandary because they only really have one tool, which
Yep.
is the interest rates. Obviously, they monitor the banks. Their job is also to ensure that the banks stay solvent and also moving quickly as possible if a bank falls apart and deal with FDIC. But the big job is, maximum employment and low inflation or steady inflation, depending, what you look at. I mean, true. Something is predictable, essentially. Yeah, they only got the interest rates to try to stimulate or slow down the economy. Problem is that when we had zero interest rates and the economy was having issues, then there was no nothing you could do. I mean, negative
Right.
interest rates is not a good idea.
Your bag of tricks is empty.
Yeah, so I think the Federal Reserve is right to be cautious. I think a lot of industry folks should be cautious because if the economy tanks, it's never going to be like a steady drop. It's going to be a cliff drop. Rarely, I never seen a recession be a gradual decline. You just fall off a cliff. and you don't have tools to address, this cliff drop, then, we're going to be stuck at the bottom, moving in an L-shaped economy for a long period, like we saw in the early 2010s, because interest rates were very low back then too. So I think, interest rates will probably go down once there's indications that the economy is slowing down immensely. I know the GDP forecast that led the Fed keeps getting revised a little bit lower every time. But I mean, nothing that screams recession by any stretch of the imagination at this point. And, it's right out steady as it goes. So I do expect rate cuts to occur at some point in 2024, but I think it's going to be tied to some bad economic news.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. It's an ele presidential election year, so that skews everything differently too.
Well, it becomes conspiracy theory time, right? The Federal Reserve is appointed by the president but approved by the Senate. It is a term office, I believe, 5 years.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah, because it crosses over between presidents.
Right.
Because of the nature of the job, I mean, you can't get rid of them easily, you can't remove them. And they don't have to answer any phone call they don't want to answer, all the governors. And the governors do rotate. There's a term of governors, and they actually have a whole governor system where where the actually rotates around of voting and non-voting members. And non-voting members, are in the room to provide input, but even though they can't vote. And so it's quite involved. And these are not dumb people. I mean, these are economists, fiscal people. A lot of these folks have private sector experience too. They're not strictly public sector experience. And they got to make these really hard decisions trying to anticipate what may be based on past data. And just because something happened yesterday does not guarantee what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's not a easy decision.
It's not an exact science by any means, yeah.
No, and you're dealing with human beings. I mean, we're unpredictable by nature.
Not
So
you and me, Tacky. We are rock solid.
we are here every week talking to you about random stuff and hope I don't get in too much trouble. I mean,
That's right. But in general, right.
in general. So, I mean, those of you expecting low interest rate, I would expect something to happen. I mean, quarter point at some point going down. But again, the economy is really strong in the macro level. And we talk about this all the time. At the local level, it's really we're all being pinched because of inflation. We're still
Yep.
being pinched.
Separate topic. I was reading an article just this morning about the opioid settlement that the state this the money that the state received from the opioid settlements through the class action lawsuit with all the big pharma industries. I think Massachusetts got like $2 billion. Do you know if that's all been distributed to cities and towns?
I don't know yet. I saw an article, I saw the news yesterday actually on Channel 5. People now know you guys all watch Channel 5, the CBB is my station, talking about how there needs to be better accountability for city towns on this money regarding the fact that using it for stuff that has nothing to do with the opiate crisis.
Right, yeah, police cruisers and metal detectors and stuff like that,
Yeah, this is again, voters and need to hold your municipal officials accountable
yeah. Right.
on money that they shouldn't be spending money on. And of course, the checks and balance between executive and the legislative branches of local government. I don't know how the disbursement works. Most times these disbursements tend to be multi-year disbursements. Like we did this with the cigarettes back before I was elected back in the 90s, where we had a trust fund and it went specifically to smoking cessation because that's what the state decided to do. The legislature wanted to do. And that was a multi-year distribution into the smoking cessation fund during the mid-90s and early 2000s. So I'm doubtful we'll be getting like a massive chunk of change. But it's gonna a lot of it is gonna be passed through from us, administratively to cities and towns.
Right. Yes. You actually can look up how your community, you what how much it got and how they use the funds. I looked up Quincy's. I think it got like $4.5 million and none of it has been spent yet. So I'd be curious to see how that works.
Well, voters should ask that question to the mayor and your city councilor. QuincyMA.gov is your website. If you wish to find out, who your councilors are, contact the mayor's office. I really don't know what to tell you beyond that. Municipal government is probably the most intimate part of government to voters. Forget voters, just residents in general. It doesn't matter if you can vote or not. And this is where the action is. Regarding things that affect your day-to-day life, whether it be potholes or schools or public safety or parks or whatever. And this includes grant funds and monies from the state and federal government that's given to cities and towns to be used for specific purposes. And I'm a resident voter too in Quincy. So like everybody else, I mean, if you should, if you're curious what's going on, you definitely should contact your local government. And thanks to, QuincyMA.gov. Hopefully I got that website
That's right.
correct. You can find information what's going on. And if it's not there, encourage people to, contact your counselor. If you can't reach your ward counselor, there's your three at-large counselors, and you also have to contact the mayor's office directly. So, at $4.1 million to address the opioid crisis. And we know there is still an ongoing issue in the city. People definitely should hold the city accountable on how they spend the money.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it will. I think this administration seems to be committed to that cause. It's just maybe a matter of figuring out how best to use it too.
And as you can tell me, asking all your listening, definitely engage in local government. It's the most intimate part of it because it's the closest to you that has the direct impact.
Yeah, it's where the rubber hits the road, as they say, for sure. Quite literally sometimes.
No, literally correct. Yeah, literally.
What's coming up in the district? Seeing was talking about district things. I know that this Wollaston Friends of Wollaston Beach has their splash coming up on Sunday, Tacky.
Not going in the water. Nope. Made this clear more than one time, especially, the New Year's one. Nope. I do not go in the water. Enjoy
You
the heat.
support them in many other ways, though.
I'm very supportive. Just not in the water.
Yes.
They are
Actually, it's not even in
over.
Quincy. It's over at Constitution Beach in East Boston.
That doesn't change the facts. I mean,
Still water, I know. Won't see a tacky in a swimsuit anytime soon.
no, and I wouldn't submit the public to seeing me that way.
But it does bring up the issue of the DCR, and I know you're going to try and meet with the commissioner about Quincy issues. Did that happen?
Yeah, we did. Brought the litany issues, with street lights being number one on the list as those of folks that particularly drive down Crenshaw Drive, but more importantly, Furnishbrook Parkway, because of the nature of the bends and turns and the darkness there. We made it clear. I mean, this is a public safety issue. I need this addressed as soon as possible. There still continues to be a bit of a problem that I was told was resolved last winter with the previous DCR commissioners, folks, that the transfer of the lights would go from National Grid to DCR would have been done in the next year. Well, it's been more than a year that hasn't happened. So I'm displeased about that. And we made it very clear to the commissioner that you got to figure this out. I mean, this is now moving very dangerous. As you may have seen down by the Bernard Nazi School, because my ability to pronounce that many Z's is not good, the DCR has been put down new kind of gravel-ish stuff because people picking up the kids rip up that entire side of the road along the school. That is not the state's doing. That is parents pick up the kids. So we put some material down. Working with the city, Quincy, and the school department to try to figure out how to reduce the damage. So, it becomes like a giant mud pit on those corners and it retains water. Retaining water is not a good idea, particularly into mosquito season. No curb cuts, folks. You put curb cuts in, people doing the same thing, parking on that side was going to just rip up the curb. So, that's the thing. And we discourage people from trying to do that. They're basically banned from going on the side streets. The city is pretty much set up one ways with challenging for people to be in the neighborhood trying to pick up the children across the street. So this is just the reality, and we're just trying to deal with the reality of the situation presented. Because there really is very few alternatives. Dredging continues to be a real issue. We have some ARPA money, like cash ARPA money, to address that issue for with the infrastructure portions of the ARPA money that we got. So we put that in the bud, put them in the ear. Of the commissioner, my office has been following up with the city about this, trying to get some better cost estimates because every time we're talking, that's what changes. But also, the city has put a bit share the money. So that's what the, I believe there's a thing called a waterways, is it a waterways trust fund that the city has? And like they're supposed to put half of the boat excise tax in there or something like that. There's money somewhere. It's just, making sure that we have our matches. I understand some streetlight issues regarding DCR streetlights at Quincy Drive. We have brought it up to them. Hopefully, that's easy to remedy. And also more cooperation between the city and the ECR regarding emergency storm situations and maintenance issues. And obviously we work with the state police during the summer times with Bruce about the safety issues along particularly in the summer months. So, we obviously want to work with the state police and encourage the ECR to talk more because we get mixed signals. ECR says one thing, state police says another, and like, what's going on? So we need a clear message. And also talk about the yacht clubs and their role on the beach as well as their night watch because they need overnight parking for night watch. And I didn't know this was a thing, folks. Too the yacht clubs told me it was a thing. So we'll try to make sure that they get their annual permit to ensure they can continue the night watches properly. They're the ones actually keep an eye on the harbor and the beach. And if they see something wrong, they're the ones that call the police.
Interesting. DCR is hiring lifeguards already, and you can make like up to $27 an hour.
Yeah, I remember this was $18 an hour 4 or 5 years ago before COVID. We already had a lifeguard shortage before COVID started. We did have a lifeguard shortage. Again, labor market's tight. You don't want to be in the sun and the water making $27 an hour part-time in the summer. You might be able to make $27 somewhere else. That's the problem we're having in government. The people, especially during the seasonal areas, going to pay top dollar for a temporary help. You got a teenager you want to put out to work. This is definitely the summer to do it. Again, we really encourage people to look at the state website for jobs, but these seasonal jobs for teenagers in particular, college students, ain't a bad deal.
Right. Yeah. And the city, the recreation department actually has lifeguard training courses that Quincy residents can look into.
Yeah, and the DCR will pay for your training and you get paid to take the training.
Right. Yeah. They're doing everything they possibly can to get you to take the job.
Well, we talk about things like wage inflation. I have some people tell me, oh, it's not a real thing, wage inflation. Seasonal help for lifeguards, $27 an hour, folks. I mean, that's not wage inflation. And this is the state desperately trying to find people. And of course, when we have to pay increased wages, it impacts the rest of our budget, as we talked about earlier. And it can impact other programs at the ECR, but we need lifeguards. And now we're, willing to, pay top dollar in a competitive field. That of other jobs, not lifeguards, but other jobs that the seasonal out there, and it's tough. It's tough for everybody. And the government is also part of the challenges of this workforce shortage.
I saw her in the Senate talking not too long ago, an unveiling of an Abigail Adams portrait for Women's History Month in March. Is the House going to do anything?
I didn't know there was a portrait.
Oh, well, there is.
Chris, yeah. I mean, that someone told me last night about it. I'm like, what portrait? Just because I work here doesn't mean communication's great, folks.
I'm glad it's not just here.
No, it's not just you guys. Trust me. Just because I'm in the building does not guarantee I have great communication what's going on around here. I mean, this is.
Well, Senator Kina was there for the unveiling.
Well, because it was in a Senate chamber. I'm in the House side. I'm across the hall.
I think you should have a house portrait unveiling too.
They have more space. I mean, if you come visit us, you can see why. The House, the Senate reading room, which used to be the Senate, because the Senate used to be the House in the old days before they built the wing in the back in the late 1800s. They actually have the ability to rotate pictures around, which is predominantly Senate President in that pictures in that room. But they can put other things on display. The House actually doesn't have the same space. The nature of a bigger body. Not part of the true group accessibility because the Senate reading room is actually part of the true group accessibility because people do want to see this lovely ancient space as opposed to some darker and interesting spaces I have in the House lobby. Trust me, it isn't nearly as interesting. Other in fact, I have wooden phone booths. I should take the computer up and show you wooden phone booths at some point.
Oh, that would be neat.
For those who knows what a phone booth is that's listening. This is kind of the reality of this type of job, right? I mean, you can't be at everything, but it isn't like you're piped into every single thing all the time, even in something like this.
Yeah, no, I know. I didn't know, actually. That's why I asked if the house had anything similar.
No, it's also a good thing you brought up the fact that there was a painting unveiling I knew literally nothing about.
Well, just, plus it's Abigail Adams, so there's the Quincy connection.
Absolutely, absolutely, and again, also this, but also a good reminder. It is. Women's History Month. And we actually have side note, we do actually have a commission regarding historical markers of historical women in Massachusetts. It's been an ongoing project for many years now. as they continue to research more women relative message history and working with the various state agencies to increase the number of markers and signs reflecting, you know, their contributions to the Commonwealth. So that is something that we, I think it's well before COVID. It's an ongoing project, and it's, you know, it's going to be a continuing ongoing project.
Any update on the state seal discussions that you've heard?
No, just more public hearings. I think the last report was inconclusive. What to do about it?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
I'm
All right.
being very polite because it wasn't a very conclusive report. We'll see what else comes up. I don't know what to say beyond that.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Speaking of women, I mean, look at how many are holding elective office now, from the executive office right on down.
Yeah, I mean, women have made great strides, but also remember, folks, when I was first came into the state, I was a lot of women staffer were here. A lot of women had influence in public policy behind the scenes, influencing electeds, you know, on their thoughts of various issues. It's a big part of government, especially in politics, and you know, we encourage participation of women, not necessarily just for running for office, but also participating in, you know, working in legislative offices and governor's offices and offices for mayors and boards of selectmen and other places, you know, where you can, you know, learn about how not just the business works, but also, you know, teach us, because I'm still learning new stuff. I mean, I have no idea what someone 25 years old is thinking, but I have staff that is, and they're able to kind of like teach this old dude how the world's working for them. And I think that's very, very important. So I understand, you know, we talk about competitive wages. Trust me, we're the least competitive wages in my world. But, you know, like when I was a young person, I really wanted to be here.
Right.
You know, people have heard my story before about how I got into this gig. It's a lengthy story, but part of the story was the fact that I took a pay cut to come to the State House because I wanted to be here. Still here.
That story is repeated over and over again. It's people don't seek public service for the wealth.
Oh God, no! I could do a lot better. I think doing something else. I do have a law degree. I have a myriad of policy expertise that I could share with folks that could monetize. And you know, after like this many time up on the hill, I mean, I have a decent network of folks I know. Or I could run for other elected office that, you know, I may not enjoy as much. Still having a lot of fun. I think I hope every listener. The last 4 years, despite some of this roller coaster of emotions, you know, I get the sense that I'm having, you know, a good time overall, and in the sense that, you know, I'm stimulated. The work is hard, but it's something I actually like. I do like learning new things. I do like to have chats with people. I do enjoy the complexity of public policy and, you know, all the machinations and maneuvering and all these moving parts of politics. And you guys all know I'm a student. If you haven't noticed that, I'm a student of government, a student of politics, watching the world around me. So, again, all things will come to the end, but not today, as I like to say. You know, I won't leave, but not today. So, you know, where we go. But I mean, yes, you know, people who work in the State House, particularly the legislative branch, you have a passion to work here, you want to be here. It's not easy work, as a guy who's now done both sides of it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Many cities and towns are struggling with, you know, losing talented people to the private sector just for that reason.
And also the pension system.
Yep, that too. Yep.
I'm hearing more people not waiting to get to the maximum pension. I mean, they're looking at and figure age 61 is better than age 65. I mean, people are looking at their, well, in the government, we have 457, we don't have 401ks. We have no match, we have none of that stuff. But, you know, if you were able to, you know, stock up 30 years of, you know, 457 wisely, and you look at your pension number, you may decide, you know, maybe it's time for a part-time career or something else, or just get out. I mean, COVID has really changed people's mindsets about retirement. And not like I'm encouraging people to retire, but, you know, people are reevaluating their lives. And, you know, I'm not gonna lie, I've been reevaluating it too. I'm not getting any younger. About, you know, what quality of life I would like to have moving forward. I figured I was gonna work to like 75 at one point in my life, and I figured, you know, find something constantly stimulating and constantly work because you need the money. But even I'm kind of like, okay, well, am I going to live that long?
Well, when you're young, all things are possible until the reality sets in.
That is true. When I was much younger, I could do 50 years of work. Then you're like, once you like get deeper, you're like, 50 years is it seems like a long time from now.
Yes, although let's clarify, you are seeking re-election.
I am seeking re-election along with our colleagues Bruce Ayers, Ron Mariano, and John Keenan. Your Quincy delegation would like to come back for another 2 years to do the best we can for you. And it's going to be a tough couple of years to being elected. People come in with these ideas that, oh, I can change the planet because I'm here. Well, yeah, but there's a lot of us here. And most people who are running for office don't realize what they're walking into. And like I said, I'm not discouraging people from running for office, I'm not saying that. But if you should be fortunate enough to get elected, you're going to be walking into a very tough economic cycle.
Yeah, it's going to be a change, eye-opening experience, let's say. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. People think with the feds, we print money. We don't print money, people. We
Right.
are a balanced budget state. And I'll tell you, I mean, new electeds coming in, like this coming January, whoever comes in is brand new. First thing they see is 9C cuts to their community. They just promised all these things to, because that happens because people just say stuff in campaigns. And, right off the bat, you hear 10% cuts across the board for your city and town. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I've seen this happen. And these new electeds, like shell shock, like, I could fix this. No, you can't. The budget's in crisis. You're going to get smacked now as your first like 30 days in office. I've seen
Humbling, I'm sure.
this happen, and they just like they're paralyzed, like, ah, women can't just print money,
Right.
so that's so again, I'm not discouraging it, but it's always easier to be elected going to a good economic period as a new elected versus coming in a bad economic period, because I came into working the state house in a bad economy. I got elected in a bad economy. So it's but again, I've been around long enough to see how this works, and I'm much more realistic. And I'm not happy, but I understand what's going on.
Can we get out your contact information, Techie?
Sure, I'm here in the office. 617-722-2370. 617-722-2370. That's the Stato's phone number. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, TACKEY.CHAN, mahouse.gov. I do look at my emails. I do sort them and put in categories. I talk to staff about it. I'm trying to figure out what's going on when you send me stuff because I don't know what you're saying the first time out because I've never seen it before. So don't assume I know what you're saying. Facebook is State Representative Tacky Chan. X is at Tacky Chan. We discourage social media. Reach us by phone or emails, much more encouraged. Room 42 in the basement on the new side of the State House, the 1899 side of the State House. Ashburn entrance is opened. Security is there. You come visit. Obviously, we encourage people to come do tours as the weather gets warmer. And of course, MALegislature.gov. That is the state legislature's website. You can watch public hearings or sessions, look up bills. And we also have tackychan.org, tackychan.org, for the purpose of some contact numbers. And we'll be here every week or 2 weeks with Joe Calado on Tacky Talk on QATV on your YouTube and favorite podcast as well as local broadcast television. So, and check with Joe in the morning, to get your 10-minute bite of what's happening in the city.
Which, by the way, we just made up that Tacky Talk name. We that just kind of came about later.
Yeah, that was not a, that was not, it was, the, by the way, this is not an endorsement by QATV for me, nor endorsing any kind of random titles I decided to put in front of Joe's show. It is Joe's show. I just have fun with him.
We do have fun, Tacky. That's true. I enjoy it. So, thank you so much. We'll see you next week.
See you next week, Joe.